So today is
Beis
of Tevis, Tafshinayin Chesti, 10th of December, 2018, Zeis Chanukah. And here he goes. So Perek Yud Aleph. So Vahia Am Kimisonim. So the people were Misonim. They were complainers. So he pointed out. So Rashi says Ina Am El Rishayim. The one that says Ha'am, that's referring to Rishayim. What were they complaining about? So why are they called that? So Rashi says Imisonim El Loshon Alila, that they just sought a pretext. Mavakshim Alila Heich Lifresh Me'achariyam, that they were seeking a pretext in order to separate from Hashem. A similar thing is said by the Ramban. Ramban here comments, there it is. First he quotes Ibn Ezra, that actually seems to be referring to a specific sin. Now, I'm not sure if he says what it is, or if he knows what it's referring to, but he seems to say specifically a sin, and Ramban says, no, Einu Nachon, it's not correct. Right? Rather, why would the Torah cover it up if it was to a specific sin? So that's an interesting point to make, meaning not just does the Torah often not cover up sins, and it does cover up certain miracles. The Ramban is saying if there really was a specific avera, the Torah would not cover it up. It would not leave it to our imagination. It would specifically tell us what it was. So rather, Nachum Be'inai says, the Ramban ki hasher nisraku le'har Sinai, when they left Har Sinai, shayakarov li'yishuv uvav betoch ha-midbar, which they were closer to civilization. Now they're really in the middle of the desert. Hagadol v'hanoyer v'masa rishon ha-yibitzar v'atzom li'mor ma'nasa. They said, what are we going to do? How are we going to live? How are we going to eat? How are we going to drink? And how are we going to carry this burden? And when is this affliction going to leave us? And that was their issue. They were just, and it wasn't that they were nervous. Sorry, it wasn't that they like physically or actually made these complaints. Rather, they were mitzdar al atzma. They were depressed. That's the way the Ramban seems to read it. They were depressed. They were just, oh, great, this is our life now. Now, it's unclear why, what's so bad about their life now. So maybe that itself is the sin of the Masonim. It's not so bad, and yet they were still complaining nonetheless. The Sfarno even adds in, I think the Sfarno is saying similar to the Ramban. It says, Lo misonim b'libam be'emes, ki lo aisa etzlam shum seberu'il zeshis onenu. They weren't really complaining in their hearts, because they didn't have anything to complain about. Aval ahayim misonim b'divreihem linasos. Rather, they were complaining in their words as a test. As a test to what? It's unclear. It's unclear where the Sfarno was leaving you here. I looked in Rabbi Pelkovitz's translation, where he has some footnotes. I didn't really get a clear understanding of this Sforno, but the Sforno seems to be going along with Ramban. They really had nothing to complain about, but yet they were depressed. They were saddened, nonetheless. About what? It was unclear. That might be why they were complaining. If you have nothing to be sad about, so there's no sense being upset.
Since they left Har Sinai, this spiritual level has decreased. Yeah. Right? Because they were
Says you. Why do you assume that?
Well, when they were in Har Sinai, they were learning all day long.
And they weren't here. They were walking. They were listening to Wayu Torah. They were listening to Shirim as they walked. No? I don't know. Okay, continues on the Pasuk here. So Pasuk in verse 5, Zacharnu es hadaga. Right, we talked about this the other day. Asher nocha b'mitzrayim chinam. We remember the fish which we used to eat for free, and the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. Right, we miss all that stuff. So Rashi had said that what do you mean they eat it for free, right? They couldn't even get straw for free to make bricks. How are they eating these fruits for free? So rather, says Rashi, Omer chinam min hamitzos. That means free, meaning it was free from mitzos. It was not a paid pro quo with Hashem, that Hashem says, if you do mitzvahs, then I'm going to give you stuff, I'm going to give you food. So Rashi is pointing out that was missing in Egypt. In Egypt, they got whatever they got. There was no, it was not contingent on them fulfilling mitzvahs. Now, everything they get, they have, is only contingent on fulfilling mitzvahs, which is certainly an interesting shot from Rashi.
They were slaves, you know, right?
Okay. But,
really free.
Yes, so my ninth grade Rebbe, Rabbi Kerner, used to refer to that as the gigatos syndrome. What is the gigatos syndrome? Anybody know?
Gigatos.
Gigatos. What does gigatos stand for? Gigatos, grass is greener on the other side. So that's what they're looking back on. Grass is greener on the other side syndrome, and they are looking, they are imagining that. But at least then it wasn't like tied to this existential threat that if you don't do mitzvos, we're not going to get this stuff. We got whatever we got back then. And it was in the Egyptians' interest to give us something, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to exist in order to do their work. So there are, yeah?
There is none, chopped liver. I mean,
they're
getting one for free.
Right. So, correct. So that's the next part. Okay. So hold off on the mun. We'll get into the mun. They were getting mun. They're complaining about that. All we get is mun. So says the Ramban. So Ramban says, no. Lefi pshuto, they did. Ki hayu hadaygim hamitzrim, the Egyptian fishermen, ma'avidin osam limsho chadagim shenachaz mimetsuda uvchomros, v'hayu nosin lehem min hadagim kemina kol porshe mikhmaris. He said, no, they actually did get a portion of these things. That if they were slaves that were involved with the fishermen, so when the catch came in, is that what you would say? The nets of...
When the fleet comes in.
The fleet? The fleet are the boats.
When they bring their catch in.
Okay, when they add their catch in and they had these nets filled with fish, so they would be able to take a few of them from themselves. And similarly, the kashum and the eftichim and the chatzim, the matzah, the shumim, all those things were very abundant in Egypt. It was like a garden of vegetables, and where they were involved in those gardens, so they would be able to take some from them, and they were able to take some for others as well. Or that perhaps there were actually people that worked for the king himself, and they were able to subsist, they were given some of these goodies as part of it. So the Ramban says, no, it is possible. They were slaves in Egypt, they were responsible for purchases of their straw, but they weren't given some of these vegetables and fish as freebies along the way. Okay, but what about the mun? What's the story with the mun? So we're all told from the time that we were 4 years old that this mun that fell, they could have it taste however they wanted. If you wanted to have pizza every day, you could have pizza every day. If you wanted to, and that leads to all these interesting questions. Well, can you have a cheeseburger, right? Cheeseburger. Would that be okay? Or if you decide to imagine something as meat, does that make you fleshiks for a little while? So these are all interesting, very practical lemaisa shilas, but it's unclear if that really is how we assume that mun tastes like. I mean, the Torah gives two descriptions of the mun, and in either place does it describe it as tasting however you want, and describes its taste, right? So here it describes the taste of the man kizra gadhu, it was like coriander seed, it was like this, and looked like crystal. In fact, there's a Wikipedia page for manna that you can take a look at where it gives some suggestions as to what it is. And they have a picture of this crystal looking like substance, which they suggest it might have been. And it says that they would grind it and with a mortar, they would,
grind it in a mill or beat it in a mortar.
Okay, grind it or beat it or cook it, and they would be able to make cakes out of it and things like that. So if they were, so what's going on there with those tastes? So the Rashbam picks up on, the Rashbam of course is the most, it goes according to the simplest level of pshat, or what he understands to be the pshatiest pshat. And he says, well, you know, it's different what it says here than what it says back in Bishalach. That Bishalach talks about that they would, it would be like this oil. It was baked in honey, and that's not mentioned over here. So the Rashbam says, "I'll explain to you why they're angry." That he suggests that when they would grind it up, it would lose the taste. It would come down tasting sweet, and then when they would work on it, it would lose that taste. Now, I don't know why they didn't pick up on that after a little while and not do that anymore. But that was the problem. They decided they got a little too fancy. They're given this stuff which tasted sweet, and instead they patched it around with it, and it started having different tastes. And that was the problem, and that's why they were upset. Okay, so that is the pshat of the Rashbam. The Rashbam doesn't go beyond the psukim. Not that the Rashbam doesn't necessarily believe in the Medrash, but at least in terms of pshat in the understanding of the psukim, so he says, depending on whether they worked on it or not, that would determine its taste, and the taste is clear from the pasuk, from the verses itself, what it actually tasted like. Rashi However, says, no, I'll tell you what it was. He does buy into the, could have a taste whatever they wanted. But Rashi says, though, but it was not appropriate for them to have cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. I mean, they can have mud taste like anything in the world that you want it to taste like, except for those things, right? What was the problem? Why specifically those things? Because it was dangerous. It was dangerous, at least for a nursing woman. If they mama nishtan l'chol davar chutz mi'elu, if they shame kashim l'mei nikos, because it's not good for nursing women. Or l'isha al ochli shum uvatzam if they hatinok, that they shouldn't have these garlic or these onions because of the baby, And that's why they were upset. So they were specifically complaining about these things because these are the things that they were not able to have access to. Now, that's a little bit hard to get. What Rashi seems to be understanding is that when they would imagine mud to be a certain taste, it would actually gain all of the attributes of that food. Unless you understand just simply that the taste is problematic for a nursing woman. That a woman who, if a nursing woman has garlic and the taste of garlic, not the garlic itself, but just the taste of it, that could be problematic. But anyways, those things were off limits, so therefore the Jews were complaining about missing those things. Then there are two midrashim. One of those midrashim appear both of them appear in the Medrash Rab and Shvos. At least, you know, there are probably more that discuss mud, but two that I could find that discuss mud. So it talks about, it's the entire Medrash about how Hashem makes miracles subjective to the person that needs it. And it makes the point with regards to mud. There it is. That Amar, this is in Parsha Hey, number 9. It says, Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Im Tamei Ata Al Davar Hazeh. If you're surprised regarding this, that Hashem could that Hashem could make things subjective to the person. Limud Min Haman, Shelo Ayorad LiYisrael El Lefi Koach Shel Kol Echad VeEchad MiYisrael. That it fell down for each individual Jew, subjective to what their strengths were, or subjective to that individual person. Why? So Habachrim, the young boys or the young men, Hayu Ochen Oto Kalachem. They ate it as bread. It talks about bread. So therefore, it was bread for the young men. And the elderly people, Kitzapichas Vedvash, they had it like a cake fried in honey. Now, why specifically they needed it as a cake fried with honey, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how old is either. But whatever. And the Yomkim, the young children, the nursing children, they had it Kechalav Mishadi Imam. For them, it tasted like breast milk from their mothers. And it quotes a pasuk that the word Lishad is mentioned here. In Pasuk Ches, it talks about Lashad. Now, literally, that means kneading, but they say Lashad, like Shadim, which literally means the breasts of a woman. And the whole of the ill people, Kasolas Ma'orav Bidvash, for there it was like fine flour mixed with honey, which was good for them. And the other nations tasted as being bitter, like fresh coriander seed. For them, that's how it tasted for people that that weren't Jewish. Now, and then the Gemara goes on, and then the Medrash goes on, it says, Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, Umin haman shayim min echad nepach l'kama min b'shvil tzorech l'echad v'echad. If man, which is one type of food, can change subjective to the needs of each individual, hakol, the voice of God, which contained, how much more so that Hashem could adapt his voice towards the different people, which is what the Medrash was talking about before. So that doesn't seem to indicate that the man could taste however one wanted, rather it just means that it was the same mud was subjective to the needs of each person. The idea that it tasted according to the desire of each person, so that actually shows up later. That's a medrash in Bishalach, where it actually talks about where the story of mud is found. And there the medrash says, there it says l'chol chai mazon, that you'll satisfy the needs of everything. El l'chol chai ratzon, shehu nosin l'chol echav echav ritzono mashu mevakish, that he provided each and every individual that which they sought. V'chein lasses lavo sotu, in the future nosin HaKadosh Baruch l'chol echav echav kol mashu mevakish, Hashem will give to each person that which they seek. Let's Okay, it seems, I don't think it has to do with food, though. So, v'yutima atal, and if you're astonished by this, reima asli yisrael b'lom hazeh, see what happened in this world. Shorid lehem amon shayel bo mikol minei tamim, that Hashem dropped the mon, which had all kinds of tastes in it, via kol echem yisrael tom kol ma shayel rotze, and every Jew could taste what they wanted, based on a pasuk. Alright, k'shayel mis'avil lechol davar, when they wanted to eat something, via omer b'fiv, iluli ayel li petama echad lechol, they would say, if only I had a piece of fattened meat to eat. So the taste in its mouth, in their mouth, immediately tasted like fattened meat. They would say this, and Hashem would listen. And Rabbi Abba adds in, even if they didn't say it, but even if they just thought it, that would be sufficient. Hashem would make it that which they craved. Now, I don't know if it included the cholesterol of fattened meat. I don't know if it how much of the properties it adapted, but at least in regards to taste. So there is a medrash describing the idea that tasted how you want it, but as you can see, that's not universal, but that is the clear understanding of how to understand man. What?
Did it have the texture?
Yeah, I don't know.
How much of the...
Like tofu.
I don't know.
Like tofu.
Crunch? Sure, yeah.
Crunchy. Remember, it's the sizzle of the steak. Did it have a sizzle?
Who compiled the Medrash? Different Midrashim were compiled by different people.
Like the art scroll, you know.
Oh, who put this together? What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's a standardized text, right?
Well, the text is the text.
Right. Where does the text come from?
See, I should know the answer to this very well because I actually took a course in college called Biblical Midrashim, but I actually remember nothing from that course. Other than different Midrashim have different authors. Yeah, and some are halachic midrashim and some are agadic midrashim, but they do include Amoraim in them, so it must be from later. There are some even from post Rashi, the Yalkut Shimoni, I believe. Quotes it was actually organized after Rashi, which has a famous answer to the very first Rashi in Chumash, where it says Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Right, the first Rashi in Chumash starts with Amar Rabbi Yitzchak said. So some suggest that was Rashi's father. So Rashi was sort of paying homage to his father because Rashi goes on to quote a Medrash, which is not quoted in the Medrash in the name of his father, right? So some suggest, I believe the Taz has a commentary on Chumash where he says, so Rashi is sort of like, you know, his father asked the question, so he wrote in the name of his father, even though he superimposed it on the Medrash. So the question is that the Yalkut Shimoni quotes it as Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So how could it be, right? What's the whole issue, right? There's obviously someone in the Medrash whose already name is Rabbi Yitzchak. The answer is the Yalkut Shimoni might have been quoting Rashi, not the other way around. Anyways, so we continue on. So in Pasuk Yudal. Well, it's a compendium. It's a Yalkut. It's a collection of things. So when the collection took place, I think, you know, again, it's not my area of expertise, as if anything is my area of expertise, but this is certainly not. But I believe that it was composed, it was put together after Rashi left. Yeah, not that the word it was edited, like just right. Like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi wrote the Mishnah, but we understand that Rabbi Meir was the writer, so he Rabbi Yehuda was the editor of the Mishnah, and even that was probably mostly done by Rabbi Chiya. So whatever.
This
for another time.
After that, I mean, Medrash.
Medrash is long after that. The Medrash quotes Amoraim. The Amoraim and the Medrash. Right? I mean, these we just quoted. Anyone? Any names?
Some Medrashim are.
Rabbi Simon. Who else? I'm just looking around the pages here. Who's quoted here? Yeah. Okay. All right. So we go to Yud Aleph here. So Yud Aleph, Moshe complains to Hashem. And he says, "Lama harios liavdecha? Why were you so bad to your servant? V'lama lo matzisi chim beinecha? Why can I not find favor in your eyes that you placed this burden upon me?" So it could just be the emotion that he is complaining. Right? He is complaining. He said, "Why? Well, you know, what did I ever do to get this?" So Sforno adds in. He says, "No, it's a little more significant than that because Moshe is actually pointing. V'lama lo matzisi chim beinecha? When I said to you, 'Shlach no biyad tishalach,' when I said to you, 'Send somebody else.'" What you're saying, I'm not just making it up now. Now that I wanted the job the whole time, and now I see it's hard, so I'm complaining. What you're saying, I was complaining all the way in the beginning. I didn't want this job, right? So
that wasn't for me.
Right now, in fact, that is an interesting line. The fact that the Sforno is quoting that the Shlachna Biyat Tishalach is the last argument that Moshe used, not the first argument that Moshe used. When Hashem sort of answered all of Moshe's questions, and Moshe is just like, oh, you know, but still, just send anybody else, even though I don't have a reason, even though you've already defeated all my reasons. And Hashem actually gets angry. I think the next words there are Charon Af Hashem, that Hashem got angry with Moshe for making that taina. But here Moshe's saying, you see, I was right. I didn't want the job, and it's really being very difficult. And Lashum, and you've placed this burden upon me. This Sforno continues on and says, as if they don't have anyone except for me, lepachus l'shat for me to join with me. So Moshe is saying, I would like somebody to be able to share the burden. And he says, did I give birth to these people? Hanochi harisi es kol amazed. Did I conceive these people? So some of us just say, well, okay. I mean, the immediate reaction is just Moshe's like, I didn't, what did I do? So his friend again jumps in and says, no. It's very specific language that Moshe is using. He says, hinei ha'av yochol lahani gespan of achal pishem chuluki adev. He says, a father could deal with his son, even though the son is different than the father. Right, the father, why is that? Because the father loves the child, and he wants to do whatever it is in order to be the best for the child. But these people, and by the way, the son has the same belief in the father, right? The son understands that the father wants what's best for him. At least, you hope that the son thinks that the father is doing what's best for him. But these people don't believe in me at all. And they are very close. They are suspicious of everything I do on their behalf. So it's not just that Moshe is saying, I didn't want anything to do with them, and I didn't, boy, did I birth them, etc. Moshe is saying, had I birthed them, had I been actually their parent, we could deal with some of these challenges. But I'm not their parent, and therefore we're distinct from one another. Now I believe the rabbi Beth HaMedrash gave a drasha on this a couple of years ago, where he talked about that was what Hashem was challenging Moshe with. Maybe Moshe was saying, am I supposed to be their parent? Which Hashem was, the answer is, well, yeah, that actually is part of your job, right? Not just to be the leader and to be the director, etc., but to also be the parent, to also be to show them some unconditional love. That perhaps is part of Moshe's challenge, but it had to do that. But the Sforno is picking up on this, saying that it is that was his issue. I mean, I'm not endowed with the biological connection to them and the emotional connection to them to be able to lead them as is appropriate, be able to put up with some of these challenges that we're confronting. Okay, we move along. It's interesting, right?
You're
going to say it's interesting.
I'm just saying, we call everybody else Moshe. Yaakov Avinu, that's our father. Now we
slowly
switched to Moshe
Rabbeinu. That's true.
So maybe if it was Avinu, he would have been a...
Maybe? Okay. Good. So we left off with this with Rashi the other day. I want to fill in some of the gaps on this. The Rashi says here, Val, can I have a... is there a Tanakh accessible in here? Okay, so thank you. So Rashi here, so when Moshe's complaint is, he says, "Vim ka'o," this is, I can't bear them myself. And he concludes with saying, if this is what you're going to do to me, hargini na harog, imatsasi chin meinecha, v'aler ebirasi. He says, if you're going to kill me now, so if I find favor in your eyes, I want to be killed now, v'aler ebirasi. And I will not see, birasi, my evil, literally. So what does it mean, my evil? My evil is really, what Moshe is really saying is, your evil. I mean, I don't want to see the bad things you're going to do to them, so I don't want to, so therefore, kill me now. But the word literally means, varasi, my evil. So what's going on? How is Moshe saying, I don't want to see my evil? What is going on? There, so Rashi says, berasam ha'ilo lichtav, it really should have been written, or was written, berasam, your evil, Ela Shekina Akasav, but they changed the verse, V'ze Echon Mitikune Sofrim B'Torah. This is one of the fixes of the Sofrim in the Torah. Right? This is one of the fixings of the Sofrim in the Torah. So that sounds what? heretical, right? Right. We're supposed to believe
hanky-panky.
This is right. We're supposed to believe one of the Yud Gimel Midos from the Rambam is that not Yud Gimel Midos. The Yud Gimel Ani Mamz in the Rambam is that we got the Torah. It's completely and 100% complete as was given to Moshe. So the Sisi Chachamim says here, yeah, come on, you can't take that. Rashi didn't mean that, right? Rather, wrote Zalomar Kederach Sofrim Kishe Kosvin Svarim Manhigin Osan Derach Sivasan. That that's how things get written. That when they write it, they make these corrections in the way of writing it. So too, Hashem told Moshe when he was writing the Torah that this is the word you're going to use. You're not going to talk about my anger. You're going to talk about your anger. And Moshe obediently says, "Yeah, yes, of course," and wrote it specifically in that way.
Your anger, or your evil.
You're evil. I'm sorry. You're evil. All right. Hashem doesn't want to say that I'm evil, right? That's not appropriate. For me. It's you're evil. So in the What's Bothering Rashi book, perhaps you should have brought it, but the What's Bothering Rashi book, he points out that that's probably, Sukham might say that within Rashi, but Rashi himself, I should have brought it even. You don't happen to have a Tanakh with Rashi in the room. No. So, but in Eov, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Gimel, so there's a similar thing going on there, that the friends of Eov are upset at He says, "V'sholshes reyav about Eov being ill." Right? Eov is ill, and right, you know the basic story of Eov. Right? So in Perek Lamed Beis, it goes on for a long time, the Perek, but the book. But in the three friends, Charaf Apo al Asher lo matzau mana, they were upset because they could find no answer. V'yarshiu es Eov, and they had condemned Eov.
Yeah.
What did Eov do? So Rashi there says it wasn't condemning Eov, it was condemning Hashem. And it was changed. Right? They condemned Hashem because of Eov's suffering. And Rashi goes on to say, and you see this a bunch of times in Tanakh, and one of the psukim that Rashi actually quotes is our pasuk, that it was changed by the Sofrim. Who are the Sofrim?
Ezra.
So in the What's Bothering Rashi book, he suggests that it might not have been Moshe Rabbeinu, it might have been Ezra later on, that it was written one way, and Ezra wrote it. Ezra changed it. The one shot in the Torah, right, is the Torah is that, no, it was always written this way. That's probably the yeshivish understanding found on the daf in the Mikros Gedolos. But, you know, the What's Bothering Rashi book, he's a pretty firm guy, he actually has skubbos from Rav Shmuel, so I think it's okay, we're okay quoting this in public, that no, perhaps his understanding is that the Torah was written one way, that's the way it existed, until Ezra.
Right.
Ezra is in the category of Sofrim. And in fact, the Gemara says about Ezra that the Torah had not been given by Moshe and Aaron. Ezra was ra'oi. Ezra was fit to bring the Torah.
Right.
And he suggests that Ezra may have made the change, which means that's a pretty long time, though, that it was until it was, quote, corrected or fixed or changed or whatever verb you want to put in.
What about the published instances where the word is pronounced differently than
Kri Uksibs. Okay, so we understand those as being part of the Masorah, that both the Kri and the Ksiv, and in fact the Gemara darshans out halachos from that. In fact, there's Machlokas, which is the main one, Yeshim the Mikra, Yeshim the Masoras. So doesn't have to go here, and all of them they'll give a pshat for otherwise. But here, and I remember I once came across a lecture that I listened to where it was the title of the lecture was Fixing God's Torah, where it was about this issue. And it wants to bring a proof because in the Gemara in Kedusha, when it tries to figure out what the middle of the Torah is, it says, well, we can't figure out exactly what the middle is we have a Masorah for what the middle is, but we can't figure out exactly why that's the middle, because we're not experts in additions and subtractions from the Torah. So we can understand that in many different ways, but not
we can't
for now.
What is an original and what's added?
What?
We can't discriminate.
Well, it seems to be implying that there are changes in the Torah. I mean, that the actual Torah that we have is not the actual text. Now, you don't have to understand it that way,
right?
The yeshivish understanding of that would be is that, well, you know, not all the words are ma'akev for figuring out the middle. I mean, if you would measure beginning to end, it's way off. So that word that the Gemara is telling you. So which vavs are in, which vavs are out?
Right.
Is the word, right here, at oseli. So it could be written with a vav, it could be written without a vav.
Right, right.
So does it mean we're not experts in terms of the text, or we're not experts in terms of counting which vavs should be part? Right, is that vav, when you write ose, aleph vav shin hey, does that vav count as a letter, or is that vav a vowel?
Right.
Why couldn't it be interpreted to mean exactly the way it says, that Moshe say, let me not see my evil? Because he goes, before this, he goes on and talks about how he's not good enough, really, to, up to the task.
Right. So how is that evil?
It's below my pay grade.
Well, it's that he's not at the Madrega.
Okay. Look, you could change the pshat. You could figure out a different pshat. I don't have a problem with that.
I like to change the pshat better than to change the word.
Okay, but you still. But Rashi at least has earned our respect to actually at least understand Rashi. I mean, fine. So Bruce wants to say, I'd rather give a different pshat and say. And say that, which could be, if you look around on the page, you would find people that give an alternative shot. No, and like you, the Maharabag, Maharav Bruce Greif, would give a different shot. But at least Rashi, for some, A is compelled not to say that. Right, so first you have to understand, so why did Rashi give that pshat? Right, it's easier to do that than to do what he's doing here and be accused of heresy, right? Or not, but it has to be defended at least. And then second of all, once he is saying that, so what exactly did he mean by that? Right, so that's also, those are both of value to try to understand. All right, so we're out of time here. I have to figure out some stuff to talk about in your session tomorrow.